Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A fantasy from science fiction may be coming true. China, an emerging superpower, is launching a new project to collect information on its 1.4 billion citizens and rate them individually based on their social, moral, financial behavior, then reward and punish individuals based on that rating. The Chinese government calls it the social credit system. They say it will build a better citizenry. But the scale of the ambition and intrusion in the project is astonishing. This hour on Point, China's new social credit system, the ranking and rating of everyone. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you think? Can you imagine it? Can you believe it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Beijing in China is Josh Chin, reporter with the Wall Street Journal in the Beijing bureau there. He's been covering the development and impact of the social credit system in China. Josh Chin, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us by Skype there today.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's great to have you. Also with us from New York is Jiayang Fan. She is a staff writer at The New Yorker covering China, American politics, culture. She's just returned to the U.S. from Shanghai last night. Jiayang Fan, thank you very much for being with us as well.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
It's great to have you. Josh, lay this out for us. They've got pilot projects going on around the country now, but very soon, by the year 2020, the goal, I guess, from the very top in China is to have this system active all over the country as much as they can. What is it? How does it work?
Right. So basically, I mean, the starting point of this is, you know, China doesn't have a financial credit system like the U.S. does. There's no credit rating system. So they wanted to build that out. And they decided along the way that they actually wanted to sort of do it one better. And so expand the criteria for everyone's credit rating beyond financial things like whether you pay loans back, whether you pay your utility bills on time, to other things.
That's part of it, but that becomes just the beginning here.
Right, exactly. And that expands out to sort of how you interact socially, whether you run red lights, whether you commit sort of misdemeanors or bigger crimes, and even possibly probably eventually to how you act online and sort of what you say and what sort of information you spread and that sort of thing.
If you cheat on the subway fare, if you jaywalk, if you violate family planning rules, of course, there's been implications for that for a while. In some of the manifestations, even reportedly, whether you call your parents enough or pay enough attention to your parents.
That's right. Yeah. So in Shanghai, the city of Shanghai, the official media there have come out and said there's a law in effect in China whereby parents, elderly parents, can sue their adult children if they don't visit them often enough and ensure that they're sort of clothed and fed and sort of do their filial duty. And if parents sue their kids for being unfilial and their children don't obey the court, then they can be docked points in their social credit score.
So the idea is here to fire up the big computers in China and ultimately give everyone in the country, that's 1.4 billion, a score. And what difference will it make if I have a high score or a low score? Josh, what's the vision?
Right. So your score can sort of affect all sorts of things. I mean, I think the idea, I mean, there's a certain element of public shaming in here, but then there's also sort of sticks and carrots and if you have a good score, for example, you might get sort of priority access at the hospital, or you might get a lower rate on a home loan, or your kid might be able to get into a better school, or move to the front of the line on getting into school. Conversely, if you have a bad score, you could be paying a higher interest rate on your home loan, or not get a loan at all, or be banned from traveling on planes and then high speed trains, that sort of thing, which is actually already started happening.
Or given a worse room in a hotel, or not permitted into a hotel at all.
Possibly, yeah. Luxury hotels, right? I mean, they've talked about it. You know, if you are a low credit person, if you're untrustworthy, then the thinking is you shouldn't be spending vast amounts of money staying in 5-star hotels. So maybe you can go down to the sort of cheaper motel down the street.
So these are real world consequences that could hit at many levels of daily life. Josh Chin, standby in right. Beijing. Jia Yangfang in New York. You're just back from Shanghai.
Yes,
to,
I am.
To American ears, this can sound like an unbelievable Orwellian kind of monitoring and system. I mean, Josh writes, it calls it a digital reboot of the methods of social control.
Right.
But how does China see it? Do they see this as Orwell or how are they describing it?
I think you have to remember that the Chinese government has only occasionally given people hints of what's going to happen. So when I was in Shanghai for the past week, for example, and asked friends what they thought of the system, some of them were, frankly, a little bit confused. Others said that they had read about it, but they felt that it doesn't quite affect their lives yet. And that might be because it's a little bit into the future. But even for those living in Shanghai, when I mentioned, does not visiting your parents cause you, you know, lower your points? They laughed. And there's this sense that, well, it hasn't touched my life immediately. And I think in China, that's generally true. Only when it's implemented, when it has a direct effect on your life, does it become a reality. So for now, I think it's a vision into the future.
I mean, Josh, you describe it as a digital reboot of social control. But Chinese leaders have said, well, we've got a problem in our country. We have a so-called trust deficit. People just aren't behaving well enough toward one another. Maybe because the old Confucian ethic broke down, and then the early Communist Party ethic broke down. They're in this freewheeling time now. And they say we're trying to build a better citizenry here, Josh.
Right. I think that's the I think they're probably sincere about that. I mean, China sort of, it's hard to underestimate the kind of social the sort of waves of social change that China has gone through over the past 3 or 4 decades. I mean, they went from a sort of communist system, planned economy, to kind of a capitalist free-for-all in a very, very short period of time. And I think there's a sense generally that, you know, I mean, the political corruption is very common. There's a sense that there is sort of no, the moral bearings have kind of come loose in China. And I had one scholar, a risk management expert who was involved in advising the government on this system. And he put it to me, you know, there's no church in China. There's no sort of dominant social institution that really determines what morality is. And so you need other systems to incentivize people to act in more moral and ethical ways. And I think that this is a system that the government really believes is necessary to build trust with people, and not just between people, but trust of the government and of businesses as well, businesses and government will also be subject to this system.
And yet it can sound incredibly Orwellian. I mean, the amount of information gathering and the way it would impinge on people's everyday life once implemented. But the Chinese government is very open about this. I mean, this is not secret. Maybe not everyone knows about it yet, Zhang Yifan, but they're talking about it and have been for a while. I've got a little tape here from, this is 2014, and an anchor here for China's state-owned television, CCTV, is reading a statement from the premier, Ku Qiangli. He's announcing the social credit system, and he's saying here the system will be a way to benefit the honest and punish the dishonest. This is the Chinese premier then saying, right now, the lack of credibility is still a weakness in the development of our country. Commercial fraud, production fraud, academic dishonesty happens quite often, which makes business and general public the victim. We must implement forceful methods to improve social credit, they're calling it, or trustworthiness, I guess. Is it even possible, Josh Chin, to do this? I mean, 1.4 billion people, are the computers big enough to keep track of all this data?
Right, and that's the big question that's sort of hanging over this. I mean, there's quite a bit of sort of fear that the talk about Big Brother and all that sort of stuff. But if you talk to the scientists and the scholars who are kind of involved either in building the system or advising the government. You know, they are sort of at least presently at the, you know, presently skeptical that the government's going to be able to pull all this together. I mean, it is an immensely complex project. If you think about it, you're collecting data on all these people, and not just people, but government agencies, businesses, and you have to, you know, there's government agencies all collecting this data already, but they're doing it in different ways and according to different standards on different systems. And how do you pull all of that together? And then on top of that, you know, how do you develop an algorithm that can sort of fairly and reasonably pull all this information into a single credit score?
But they're pretty determined to do it and do it by 2020, which is not far away. They're rolling it out in the city of Hangzhou and many other locales around the country, right?
That's correct. That's correct. So yeah, there's several pilot programs going right now. They're still very much in the early stages, though. We had a few people sort of check their personal credit records for us and show us what came up. And so far, you know, there's sort of basic financial information in there, and the fields for sort of social information are left blank, which suggests that they're still kind of trying to get this system online.
But the impact is already there. Jiayang Fan, Josh is reporting that already people have been denied permission to travel in certain circumstances on the basis of their score.
Right. I mean, I think that is probably affects people who already are, who probably don't have the best relationship with the law and are really scrunching at the bottom. I think for white-collar workers and for those in the middle and upper classes, this is much less of a problem. And I think one of the things to think about as we look at this system as a whole is how it will affect the most vulnerable members of society. And what I mean is those who already feel like they need to get ahead and are working at the lower echelons of society, and for them I think this will be most problematic.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about China's big new pilot project underway now. They're hoping to roll it out nationally by 2020. To track a whole lot of what its citizens do in their everyday life and give them a rating on their behavior in their social life, their financial life, their moral life, a rating or a social credit score, I guess, that they would carry or already are in some cities in China, carrying around with them that will impact the way the world opens up to them or doesn't. Have a good score and you may get a better place or into the hospital. You may get a better school for your child. You may get a better room in a better hotel or a home loan, have a worse score, and just turn all those on their head. They're calling it the social credit system, and it's not a secret. It's right out there. They want to encourage a more trustworthy society is how the government puts it. You can join us this hour. Does this even sound possible in a country of 1.4 billion people? And if computers, supercomputers make it possible, what kind of country would that be? Neat and tidy and polite or oppressed and policed and big brothered? Does it sound like science fiction to you? Josh Chin has been writing about it from Beijing for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins us via Skype from Beijing today. Jiayang Fan has been just back from China, where people there are just kind of really waking up to this. She just flew in from Shanghai last night. She joins us today from New York. Jiayang and Josh, lots of people on our social media, Facebook and Twitter and our website, are talking about this Netflix show, Black Mirror. And this is a science fiction show, British created, where people, this is a little different, but the peer-to-peer rating, where you as you live, people around you are doing ratings of you all the time, kind of the way you might rate an Uber driver, or the Uber driver might rate you. And those scores then have a big impact on how you live. Here's one scene. This is episode one, season three, where Lacey, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, is trying to book a plane ticket in order to get to her friend's wedding. The airline stewardess tells her here in Black Mirror that she no longer qualifies for the only available seat because her personal score went down 0.02 of a point on her way to the airport.
I see there's one standby seat on another plane leaving tonight. That's reserved for members of our Prime Flight program. You got to be a 4.2 or over to qualify.
Oh, I'm a 4.2.
I'm afraid you're actually a 4.183.
Oh.
Well, that's not my fault. Some woman dinged me down in the cab drive. Can't you just...
I'm sorry, it won't let me book it without the correct ranking.
Okay, there's science fiction from Black Mirror, but in China, a kind of version may be coming true right now. Zach is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Zach, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, good. What do you see, Zach?
Nothing. I thought it was interesting for viewers to know about this particular episode of Black Mirror, because if you were interested in this segment, if you wanted to watch a visual example or representation of a society that's based on ratings, then this is a great episode. I mean, it's based in more of a Western type culture, like you said. It's a British television show, but it shows you the good sides and the bad sides of this playing out. Me and my girlfriend actually watched this episode a couple weeks ago, and we laughed about it, thinking that yes, maybe that could be something of the way future, but not as soon as 2020 in China. Sounds a little shocking.
Or right now in pilot project, does it look like science fiction and a purely bad thing to you? Or what about the Chinese government saying, look, we need some way to, buff up the way people behave, and this gives us some leverage?
Well, yeah, it's like you said, it's really science fiction. Orson Welles and like a total dystopian, starts to create a dystopian and segregated, it's segregation, at the core. In that episode, not only could she get a plane, she couldn't get the plane she wanted, but she also couldn't get the new house that she wanted to get because of a social rating. And it causes people to be a lot of, a lot faker to each other. And, you're not really honest with each other then. You're just trying to please everyone.
But we've got a little tape of that. Zach, I appreciate your call. This is again from Black Mirror, where she's trying to get a place in a lifestyle community. And here's the realtor telling her she can't get a discount that's offered to others because of her, again, from Black Mirror, her personal rating, her score.
How often are the payments?
That's weekly.
Okay. A little more than expected.
There's options. You know our Prime Influencers program?
Do I qualify for that?
No, you don't. We'd need you around a 4.5.
4.5.
Hit 4.5, and there's a 20% discount.
She needs a better score, and if she got it, she'd have that great discount. It's presented as dystopian. China may be looking to use it in a way that they describe as encouraging more ethical behavior. We're wondering if it's even possible. Josh Chin, Jia Yangfan, please stand by. Yang Wang joins us right now from Syracuse, New York. He's an expert on internet behavior, assistant professor of information studies at Syracuse University. He researches privacy and security and social computing. Yang Wang, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, hi, Tom.
At a pure computing level, does this sound feasible to you? China is such a big country. They've got pilot projects rolling out, but can you imagine it applying to more or less the whole population?
Well, I think I kind of agree with what Josh pointed out earlier. I think from the technical standpoint, the challenges, one is the sheer size of the data, given the huge population, but the other is the algorithm to figure out the rating scheme. The first sort of the scalability of the data, I do think personally that it is technically possible, with the rise of cloud computing, and especially most, if not all, government agencies in China have already been collecting this information. The challenge is then how do you make these data sort of exchangeable in an exchangeable format? I think it's doable. The second challenge with regard to the algorithm, I think that's probably, in my view, a more difficult thing to accomplish, especially if they want to show the sort of general public that the algorithm is operating in a fair way. But given the all kinds of information will be collected and aggregated, how do you come up with the various weights? I mean, that to me is a much more difficult challenge.
And you mean to create an algorithm that would fairly punish or reward people if that's the goal?
No, I mean how do you come up with single score for an individual by aggregating all the information about that individual? How do you come up with the weights for different kinds of information? I think that's going to be very difficult. But, I mean, if you look at the credit score system in the U.S., in the Western countries, that's, I mean, it's kind of similar, even though it's arguably a smaller scale with regard to the kinds of information they use to figure out your credit score. But I think it's possible. I think it's probably doable.
Yang Wang, you grew up in China. You spent a lot of time in the United States. You know, Americans look at this and immediately think about science fiction and George Orwell and dystopia. Do you see it that way? Do you think the Chinese people will see it that way?
Well, I mean, I chat with my old classmates and friends back in China over social media, and I ask them, have you guys heard about this program? And most of them have not. And when I tell them, you know, how this might work and, you know, what kind of consequences this, you know, might lead to, I think most of them are kind of, skeptical about, you know, this whole thing. But on the other hand, I think in general, what I found through my own research, Chinese internet users, they're kind of get used to this idea of being monitored by the government. So, I think that part of the part of the data collection aggregation is perhaps not completely surprising to them. But how they're going to use these information to make decision about them, that perhaps is something new.
Jia Yangfan, do you think the Chinese would find this politically or morally shocking when and if they totally understand how it works? Or might they think, well, we need an orderly society, and this is a way to get more trust and better behavior, and we accept it? Or do you anticipate rejection?
I think they might understand the government's impulse, which, as Josh said earlier, is a reasonable one. For the last 30 years of economic development, there has been such an erosion of trust between individuals and China to really improve itself economically and socially can't get to that next stage without there being a basic level of trust between people. But in terms of how it's implemented, I think that's where the real questions come in. And many Chinese have been skeptical of the way that Chinese law works, which is very top-down, hierarchical. So you can imagine how in policing this program and how if it does become a numbers game and those who are better connected or have more advantages might manipulate the system. That's a very common feature of Chinese life. And it's hard to think that even when we bring in this program, that's supposed to make life better and ostensibly fair for the people, how the system, how the instrument itself could be subjected to the same sort of manipulation.
Josh Chin, I mean, what would this mean for if you're a political dissident in China or someone who's complaining online about the way the government's doing something? It sounds like it could be a pretty fearsome tool for boxing those people in.
Sure. Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously, one of the places I had profiled in my story was this district in Shanghai that's sort of piloting one of these programs. And one of the criteria they have, they maintain a gray list. It's a secret list they don't publicize, but it's kind of, you know, keeping track of who's been naughty in this district. And one of the criteria is for people who are sort of serial petitioners, and petitioning in China is what, you know, people do if they have a grievance with the government. They'll go to Beijing and they'll complain. And, you know, these are people who very easily become radicalized and become activists. So that's definitely on their radar. But actually, I think that this system, you know, most of the activists in China are sort of known to the government and they're fairly easy to control. I mean, my view of this system, I think what the government is trying to achieve is actually to sort of head off dissidents before it happens, to sort of incentivize people to fall in line in ways that they just never become activists.
But that's even creepier in a way. You just swallow it.
Right. I think that the government would say that what we're doing is we're solving all these social contradictions, you know, this very Marxist idea, before they have a chance to sort of blow up into conflict, right? When, you know, everyone is acting in faithfully in trustworthy ways, and so you just don't have the sort of social conflicts in this system that you do currently.
Let's take a call from Detroit. Aaron is calling. Hi, Aaron. You're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you see?
The last comments from your guests had me saying, wow, That says everything. First of all, I don't think it's American paranoia to think that this could be the precursor to more control and abuse. China has a history of, you know, not even allowing people to speak freely, let alone have their own beliefs. And now you're talking about an added system of control and scrutiny where you dig even deeper into their personal lives to prevent certain things or certain kind of behavior, to incentivize.
Turn the supercomputers loose. Yep.
Wow. I mean, anybody in a free and open society should be outraged that even the idea of that kind of intrusion and control into personal lives of people in any society.
Yeah, Aaron, let me hold that thought. I'll take it to Yang Wang in just a second. Let me get one more call first. I appreciate yours from Detroit. Let's get one from Alabama. James in Enterprise, Alabama. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you see?
I'm struck less by the Orwellian level of desired control that China is apparently trying to gain, and more by the fact that these controls seem to already sort of be in place, you know, maybe not to this level, but here in our country, although ours is a system of systems, you know, with law and the financial rating systems and social construct by the church, various churches. So if they need to figure out how to do it, they probably don't need to look too far to see how that's accomplished.
You see a system, what you're talking about, like your FICA score, and, I mean, every country has law. Is that really the same thing?
Well, I think if you combine all those system of systems, you know, the law, the social construct created by the various churches, the financial system, everything from local social, you know your neighbor, so he doesn't do things because he doesn't want to be called out for doing those things, all the way up to federal law and everything in between. It means that behaviors are maintained at a certain level, financial, health-wise, how we spend our money, how we live. It's, you know, of course, it's not completely controlled, but there's still incentives to help us to kind of steer us along a path so that we behave a certain way with a different outcome, maybe.
We get it, James, but maybe there is a difference in degree here. If you've got supercomputers tracking everything and then you've got immediate consequences in what you're permitted or not permitted to do. Yang Wang, you're listening to these responses from American listeners here. You hear our Detroit listeners saying this, wow, this is something that should elicit shock and outrage. How do you see it, Yang?
Well, I mean, I can understand the sentiment. Certainly, the extent of monitoring and data collection is pretty jaw dropping, especially in this case. But I do want to mention that if I may add one of the technical challenge, which I believe the government is put on their agenda, is to launch the system, but with the prerequisite of sufficiently protecting individual ordinary citizens' privacy. A few years ago, the Chinese government, I believe, there was a proposed bill on data protection, which, for example, the Euro passed. The U.S. Privacy law is really domain-specific. But that bill hasn't been passed. But just early this month, there was a new law passed in China called the Network Security Law. Actually read what they have, what they said in that law. And basically, it looks like they have specified a number of clear requirements for how service providers need to protect individual citizens' privacy, which is very similar to the fair information practices here in the U.S. So I do think the government is recognizing that individual privacy rights are very important.
Yes, but they're only protecting those from commercial interests, not from government inspection, are they?
That is not clear, as far as I can tell from that just recently launched bill. But I mean, even before, there's nothing to hold the service provider to really collect information from the individuals. So I think they're not quite there yet. But I see this as a positive sign that they're paying attention to this issue. And they're moving towards a direction that could improve people's privacy.
But
I'm not at all saying that, you know, they're there yet.
It's a pretty incredible ambition. Yang Wang at Syracuse University says technically it's doable, ultimately. Yang Wang, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Josh Chin with The Wall Street Journal in Beijing. Please stand by. And Jiayang Fan with The New Yorker, just back from Shanghai, with us from New York today. When we return, Pamela Crossley joins us from Dartmouth College. She's watching this as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
We're talking this hour about China's new project to track basically everything its citizens do and rank citizens on their behavior, almost like a credit score, but taking in a lot more and with plenty of real-life consequences. They call it the social credit system. Josh Chin has been writing about it for the Wall Street Journal, and he joins us via Skype from Beijing this hour. Jiayang Fan is with The New Yorker. She covers China, American politics, culture. She just got back to the U.S. from Shanghai last night. You can join our conversation here today. You're hearing this. You're listening. What do you think? Does it sound like science fiction to you? Does it sound inevitable in a computer-powered authoritarian state with a communist party and Confucianist roots? Do we have a little bit of this ourselves in Uber ratings and Airbnb ratings and credit scores? Can you picture this kind of thing going whole hog here in the U.S.? Can you picture being penalized for how you comment online or jaywalk or don't call your folks often enough? Josh, Jiayang, please stand by. Pamela Crossley joins us right now. She's a professor of history and Asian and Middle Eastern studies at Dartmouth College, specializes in modern China. Pamela Crossley, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Fine. We're getting a lot of response here. Let me just give you some of it. This is from Twitter and Facebook. I mean, Gene says it's already happening here, Gene is suggesting. People's chances of getting jobs can be influenced by their follower counts on Instagram or Twitter. Red Bean and Rice writes to us, says there's already a people rating app called People with two E's. It's like Yelp for rating others straight out of a Black Mirror episode. And then Via Carosa writes to us, most of us are already behaving according to a social status agenda on social media for fear of being trolled or attacked for our thoughts and feelings. Just look at Facebook, all those posts of flowers and kittens. Heaven forbid you post something intense or relevant, you'll be hunted down and destroyed. Pamela, do you see something unfolding here in China that's of a different order or different nature than what is we're dealing with in the United States between credit scores and law and the kind of social media monitoring that's informal but nevertheless real?
Well, there's the technological aspect of it, which doesn't strike me as new in any way and doesn't strike me as substantially different from sort of rating systems we have in the United States. And some of your callers and, in fact, one of your correspondents just commented on this. The horizontal integration here is a little different, but in fact, you know, we've had legends of this in this country for 30, almost 40 years, that the government or some other kind of very large entity, corporate perhaps, is trying to find the software that will horizontally integrate a whole lot of otherwise disaggregated databases. Has it happened? Has it not happened? I mean, that's always been a subject of discussion here. Of course, theoretically, it's possible. And over time, you can perfect the algorithms, probably not just now, but as you work with it, it would get better and better. So the technological side of it doesn't strike me as different in any very important way. I think the style is very different. What we would expect in the United States is that this all happens surreptitiously, and somebody puts a back door on your computer, and somebody is rating everything you've written or said, or any bills you didn't pay, and so on. But in China, the idea is to just be completely open about this. And that creates this very large kind of psychological penumbra to the whole thing, that, you know, defects in the technology can actually be remedied to a little extent by convincing people that it is working. So then you start teaching people how to behave.
Oh, you mean whether it's working entirely or not, just the fear that it might be working would influence people's behavior?
Yeah, I think it's exactly, you know, here people will buy these dummy security cameras. They don't do anything, but you're not sure. you assume it's doing something. And so people will assume that the system is comprehensive and influential, and it's going to find them wherever they are.
I mean, the Chinese government's very open about this in their planning documents. There's a slogan that they repeated a lot about this social credit rating. Everybody would have a score, and it would have a big impact on the quality of your life, the freedom, and sort of what unfolds to you and what doesn't. And they say, and the slogan is this, that they want the social credit rating, quote, to allow the trustworthy to roam everywhere under heaven while making it hard for the discredited to take a single step.
Wow.
As government policy.
I think that's the difference in style. The Chinese government is very upfront about this. Again, I don't think this is completely original. I think you see little steps taken in this direction by Google in particular, and when they launched Gmail, this idea, and of course the FICO scores. For a long time, credit scores were, you didn't want to talk about it and you didn't know who had it and so on. Now you're being taught, mostly through commercials, that you should be going around with this FICO score and flashing it at people.
Yeah, but come on, that's about me buying things. This is about, you know, if the government doesn't like the way I'm behaving, make it hard for me to take a single step. That sounds...
Yeah, but you know what's on the page. If you go to, you don't like your FICO score and you want to know how to improve it, it says, the first thing it says is you should become a trustworthy, dependable person.
Well, that just means paying my bills, but let's say I badmouth the government online. My FICO score doesn't change. Pamela Stemba, I want to get some callers in here. Robert in Toronto, Canada. Robert, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Look, this is like East Germany. The daughter of the Chinese ex-premier, Li Peng, her name is Li Xiaolin, she recommended a few years ago to the National People's Congress that China keep Stasi files. You remember Stasi? That
Secret
China
Service
Stasi
in East Germany.
Files.
Yeah.
That's right, that they keep Stasi files in every Chinese citizen. Well, guess what? This is the latest upgraded version of it. And listen, the Chinese government, their competency in being able to manage this as a single, centralized, almost like a single company managed by the Communist Party, is in serious doubt. It's been 20 years, and they still haven't been able to reveal the AIDS epidemic, that the AIDS epidemic in China was due to the blood sale.
But they don't want to reveal that, Robert. This is something they would want, and they have openly said they're not just want, but they're doing.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, even with the one-child policy, it takes forever to get the Chinese government to recognize problems and then to resolve them. Imagine you have this kind of system, and it gets used, and you have all kinds of interest groups within the Communist Party that shield leaders and so on, and they make these centralized decisions based on this information system. I mean, this is crazy. When there's a democracy, and all this is public and so on, and injustices are revealed through the press and so on, resolution is real fast. But when you have a centralized closed system like the Communist Party, it takes 20 years because of the bureaucratic maneuverings of all these insider officials to oppose things that embarrass them and so on. So this system, you know, it's a fine idea, but the entity that's going to be centralizing and managing this is a loser.
Robert, I appreciate your call, and we've got it. Josh Chin, what about this as a way of punishing political enemies? I mean, Xi Jinping has had a big anti-corruption campaign. And, of course, corruption has been a problem in China, but that has also been described as a way of kind of clearing the ranks of political enemies. Can you see this being deployed as a sort of straight-up political tool of control?
Well, when it comes to political maneuvering at the upper echelons, I actually think, you know, these are the sort of people who sort of exist in another sphere. They might not even be touched by this
beyond ratings, beyond rankings, or guaranteed a platinum rating.
Right. They'll transcend ratings, I think, to a certain degree. But, you know, I mean, to the caller's point just now, I mean, I think the government's actual, you know, one of their aims in deploying big data is actually to become more agile and more responsive to the needs of the population. I mean, I think when you talk to people who are involved in this project, that's what they say. They say, you know, we have the days of relying on human judgment, you know, need to end, but they're not efficient. We have, our country is too big, it's too complex.
But is this responding to needs, or is this marshaling behavior?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, when you talk to them, when you talk to the government themselves, they they really talk about, you know, the need to serve the population better.
By denying me a train ticket because I jaywalked?
Right, possibly. You know, I mean, if the idea is that if there's no trust in society, as Jiayang was saying,
yeah.
You know, the Chinese government needs to, they face this project of pushing China's economic evolution another step and forward. And they can't really do that without much higher levels of trust in society. And so I think that they see, you know, the Communist Party's legitimacy rides on public confidence. I mean, not in the direct way that the U.S. government's legitimacy does with elections, but ultimately all governments rely on public confidence. And so in the end, I think that they are deploying the system as a way to, in their minds, better govern the country.
Pamela, can you see credibility in that? I mean, in the U.S., we're yeah. very attuned to individual rights here. Here, the government's thinking about the aggregate sort of level of trust and seeing that it's not good at the moment, as Jiayang and others have pointed out. And saying, well, we're going to fix that by really getting in there, person by person, $1.4 billion. Is that a perspective that the Chinese population is likely to accept, where Americans might say no?
I think the Chinese, I don't know if all Chinese will accept it, but I think it's likely to be effective in China. It can be increasingly effective in the United States, too. There's plenty of evidence for that. I went to grade school, high school in the 60s, and we still had a very strong sense of what privacy is, and where something like this would strike us, maybe as Orwellian, more likely sort of Huxley, and it's more like Brave New World than mm-hmm. than it is like 1984. And, that would be our reaction. But nowadays, I'm really not sure that's the case. I think, people think, data is immortality and visibility is achievement, and here's a way to get both of them, there's behavior today is just different. So I think large parts of Chinese society, not all, will accept this pretty easily. And it's a game. You tell people it's a game, they want to know how to win. I think that's true everywhere.
You've said that you don't doubt that soon TV shows in China will have people bragging about their social rating number.
Well, yes. I mean, of course, you figure you're 21, 22. Your social rating was already affected by what major you chose in university. And now it's going to affect whether you can get married, whether you can get a nice apartment, whether you can get a nice car. It's really the kind of thing that can shake people's lives to the root. But slowly, you know, it's an educational process, and it will probably affect younger people more. And then their children even more.
Here we go. We're talking about a rating system in China that would rate people's behavior sort of night and day and then really impact the parameters of how they live. That's the idea anyway. Let's go to Jane in Toledo, Ohio. Jane, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to say really that the problem is there's the subjectivity and the objectivity. When it comes to behavior, obviously that's subjective. Somebody determining how many times you should call your mom, you know, to get so many points, that's an opinion. It's going to be based on opinions as to what is good behavior and what degrees of behavior.
Yeah, but if it's the government's opinion and it affects your rating, you know, it may affect your life if you don't follow it.
Exactly. That's my point. It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. But when you're in an authoritarian government, there's not much you can do but learn to play the game. You're going to learn how to manipulate the system in order to get more points, make things appear as though, you know, you may not really be wanting to, for instance, call your mom five times a week, but you're going to just to up your points.
Maybe you're right. And there we have the harmonious society, but I don't know about what happens to an idea of freedom in that kind of society. Jane, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Gray in Charleston, South Carolina. Gray, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great honor to be on your show. A couple points I'd like to make. One is just in terms of framing the debate, I think there's one question about the government controlling and having access to this data, and then there's another issue about just the overall usefulness of a personal reputation score. And I think that there are potential, very significant benefits of having data and being able to share that as you wish, regarding your reputation, that in a, you know, in an increasingly global society where I don't have as the opportunity that I would have had 100 years ago to develop and communicate my reputation to, you know, the people and organizations I was interfacing with. Maybe there's a need for something that's kind of computerized to do all that. So I think there are benefits, but the question is, who access, controls, and ultimately interprets that? And if it could be implemented in a way where I, as the individual, have control over what data I choose to share, and various organizations and individuals can then interpret that as they see fit, I think there are a lot of benefits, and it kind of meets the needs of a rapidly accelerating global community.
Well, a lot of that, I guess, is happening, as some of our listeners have said, on Facebook already, but maybe that's a little bit different from the government doing this and looking down, looking in, and then setting fences around your life. Zhao Yongfan, you're just back from Shanghai. Can you imagine China going off in an utterly different direction from, let's say, the U.S. here? Or does this seem like something that under different guises will be happening in both countries one way or another? How do you see it?
I see that a lot of it will depend on its the style of implementation and the flexibility of its evolution. And what I mean by that is, many times the Chinese government has a tendency to, you know, when it's under stress, when it realizes that this is a problem and a problem that might possibly affect its legitimacy and the stability of society, to, you know, make these big umbrella announcements. And I think much will depend on on the concreteness of the policy, its and the details. And if that is not worked out, this could have very, I think, dire consequences.
Well, we see a huge ambition, and it's very plain. Let me give the slogan again: to allow the trustworthy to roam everywhere under heaven while making it hard for the discredited to take a single step. And on the basis of a ranking, a rating, a number, a social credit ranking, pilot projects underway in China now. Josh Chin has written that up for The Wall Street Journal. He joins us today from Beijing. Josh, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Pamela Crossley at Dartmouth College has been watching the whole thing. Pamela, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
And Jiayang Fan, just back from Shanghai. Thanks so much for joining us from The New Yorker, Jiayang.
Great to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.